Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three important questions that all international offices are asking this week based on the news that we're seeing around the world. First up, we want to give a big shout out to all of our folks that are watching live here on Facebook. Also those that catch the recorded versions on Facebook or YouTube channel, but also those who are downloading the podcast and making it a part of their week each day on Wednesday, capturing these comments that we get from you during the live sessions, as well as your feedback after the fact. We want to make this roundup the best it can possibly be for you, and we're always looking for new ways to improve what we do to make this experience a much more enjoyable one for you. And as we do each week, we begin with our newsletter that comes out on Mondays called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. For those not familiar with SMIE Consulting, that stands for Social Media and International Education Consulting. So our newsletter comes out Monday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern, free to any subscribers, that goes direct to your inbox. It covers international education stories. There's anywhere from 15 to 30, depending on how busy the weeks are with news, on topics related to kind of big picture questions, solutions that institutions and organizations are coming up with, what fall looks like in 2020, test optional debates, and a global roundup of what's happening outside the United States in terms of international education. And then it also covers some social media stories that have particular relevance to international student recruitment. We hope that this newsletter can be a service to you as you kind of consolidate and kind of digest everything that's coming at you in terms of news. We ask that you drop the link to it on the Facebook page so that you can find the latest edition and then also subscribe if you want to get this in your inbox Monday mornings. Next up, let's get right to the questions. And the first question this week is, can the United States still compete with post-study work? This is part of the larger conversation I have with universities and college clients that I work with when we talk about just exactly what the United States is up against and how we must view everything in light of the globally competitive nature and market we're in when it comes to international student mobility. We all know that the United States has optional practical training, and that's something that has been a regular part of what international students have available to them after they're finished with their degrees, with their degree studies. That's been available for several years. And in its enhanced form since 2008, for those studying in STEM fields, it has been up to 3 years of work permission per degree level. So this is something that is very much a part of international students' expectations and has been for many years as a benefit of what they have to look forward to when they come to the United States for study. Right now, the standard offering is 1 year for non-STEM degrees and up to 3 years for STEM degrees per degree level. So students that do multiple degrees from bachelor's to master's to doctorates can have multiple years of work experience as they progress through our educational system. And it seems, though there isn't a direct pathway from study to eventual work and potential residency and such, that there is an indirect pathway to make that happen. And OPT is a bridge from that student visa status to a worker visa. An H-1 typically, which we found out for the remainder of 2020, is currently prohibited this past week. The executive order came down. Fortunately, and international educators all breathe a sigh of relief, at least partially on this, that OPT was not impacted by this executive order from the Trump administration. And there has been, and in the last 3 or 4 weeks leading up to this executive order, there was a lot of fear in the international ed and business community that the current administration was going to put severe restrictions in place related to work visas of various kinds. And certainly that did happen for H-1Bs, for Ls, L1s and other J visas for researchers and such. So there are certainly going to be campuses that will be impacted by that. If your campus brings in a large number of exchange scholars and researchers each year, that piece is affected. Again, this was not students, but it was targeted at researchers and scholars, professors that might be coming in. So under J visas and H-1B and L-1. So this is certainly that part of the equation has been impacted negatively in terms of the long-term possibilities. There's no real predicting what's going to happen next with this administration. But certainly for now, OPT is safe. But we never know what's going to happen next week or let alone tomorrow. So that's something we can at least take that comfort in. When I bring this up, this whole idea of what's happening with post-study work, not only in the United States but around the world, is it's a compare and contrast. And so often, when we see over the last 4 years, when it comes to this administration compared to the rest of the world, in terms of major destination countries, we've seen some vastly different approaches. That's not saying anything revelatory to anyone in the field who follows even slightly what's going on in the news. But what's happening outside in other countries impacts how we, how the United States and our institutions are viewed concurrently. So what has happened? We have seen in the UK late last year, the reintroduction of the 2-year postgraduate work option for international students was reintroduced after an 8-9 year hiatus. So that's certainly been a big boost to UK numbers, and certainly India has been a big beneficiary of students going to the UK for that option. We've also seen Canada. Canada now has a 3-year post-study work visa, post-study work permit that is available as part of their very clear pathway to residency and citizenship for those that come to Canada for study first. So India has been a big beneficiary. Tech grads from Indian undergraduate institutions are now choosing Canada over the U.S., and they cite specifically anti-migrant rhetoric as a factor. So there couldn't be a more, as we've talked about before, a more stark contrast between Canada and the U.S. in terms of their approach to immigration over the last 4 years. And certainly India has been a place and has extended their lead as the number one source country for international students studying in Canada, that many of those students in past years would have come to the United States without even thinking twice. That's changing. But what's even more concerning for the United States is what is happening, not just what our own institution, our own administration is doing to immigration policy and perceptions of the United States and the world. It's also what other countries like the UK that we mentioned earlier. New Zealand also, Australia also have very clear work policies, visa study to work policies as part of their programs between 1 and 3 years. The UK has now, the previous minister, universities minister in the UK, Joe Johnson, who's the brother of the current Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, he has now recommended doubling the post-study work visa that was just reintroduced from 2 to 4 years. And why does he want this reintroduced? To overcome the shock of COVID-19 and Brexit. So as a response to external factors, Brexit and COVID-19, that are currently and have and will continue to impact UK universities in terms of their competitiveness internationally, this former universities minister is now proposing it, that the work visa process or length of time should be doubled in the UK from 2 to 4 years, which would make it by far the most attractive option for post-study work for international students in the world. So when you look at that, you look at what Canada's done, you look at what we're doing, and how this current administration has been chipping away and all around immigration as it impacts areas that international students are potentially interested in, You see how difficult a situation we find ourselves in the United States. And post-study work has, yes, our institutions are at the top level, are the best in the world. There's no doubt about that. That's never been in question. Others are coming up, and that's great. That is raising all boats in a lot of countries. But when it comes to competitiveness as a destination for international students, the United States is falling behind. And post-study work is an important factor in many international students, particularly at the graduate level, but students and parents want to know what the outcomes are. Can my son or daughter get a job in his or her chosen field of study after they're finished, after they pay all this money to you to attend your school, whether it's back in their home country or staying in the United States? They want those answers. Those outcomes matter. So how are you answering those questions as international offices at your institutions? Or do you have the data to even get to that, have that conversation with prospective students and parents? When it relates to international students, we all have it for career placement rates for our domestic students, and maybe internationals are thrown in that mix, maybe not, probably not, but do you have that data exclusively for international students? So something that is important as part of how you market your institution and what your audiences want to hear. So that post-study work piece is essential to our continued success as institutions, and thankfully it wasn't cut in the executive order that came out. But we're not going to hold our breaths too much longer to find out what's coming next. We got to be proactive on this as much as we can to defend and advocate for. And we've talked about that before, the importance of that here on the roundup as well. So that's what we got for our first topic, for our first question. Shifting gears and talking more strategically. This is something that a lot of institutions struggle with. They have institutional strategic plans. There is an institution in the country that has those, doesn't have one of those. But the reality when it comes to international student recruitment as part of a larger institutional plan, oftentimes situational awareness of what's going on in the world seems to be lacking. Board of Trustees, we've heard from a recent colleague on the admissions side that says, not a single member of their Board of Trustees knows what they do in admissions, that internationally it's even worse, and that the challenge is really getting your institutions to invest beyond the fall, the next recruitment cycle. And it's hard enough for admissions officers to do that when they're knee-deep in application reading season in the fall and early spring, or recruitment to admit to reading season to admitted student events to pre-orientation events and all of that. There's hardly time to catch your breath and really think about long-term planning, but you need a seat at the table. Your bosses need a seat at the table, and you need to be informing them on the relative factors that are impacting what you do. And when I talk with college clients about the importance of planning, it really boils down to, are your administrators, are your superiors willing to have that conversation? And if not, are you surrounding yourself and your international allies on campus with folks who do have a seat at the table and where these conversations can be had? Are you informing those conversations? If you're not yourself not at that table, are you managing up in your role to a point where you feel comfortable knowing that that person does have a seat at the table, that you have their ear, that they're willing and able to fight that cause for you? Because otherwise, if you don't have that support from the top down, when it comes to budget, when it comes to staff, when it comes to just institutional support messaging, you are at a disadvantage, a strong disadvantage, and are open to opportunities for really destruction of your goals and the fight, pushing that Sisyphean task of pushing that same boulder up that hill each year and having to start all over again because things get undone. COVID-19 happened, and that has undone so many admissions offices' plans for the year. I want to hear from you if your institution has been forward thinking, and I'd love to have an interview with you on the roundup about that, and where we could talk with you about what steps you went through to get to the point where, through this kind of a challenging period, you've still been able to maintain a level head and a trajectory for your office and your planning that doesn't get immediately upset with something as dramatic as COVID-19 in terms of its impact on what you do. How early in the conversation of the impact of this pandemic were you having those talks with your bosses about, hey, our international kids that are coming from overseas, they might not get here this fall? How early were you having that conversation? If you're just starting now, you're already at a significant disadvantage. But hopefully you started that conversation earlier and you were having the opportunities to talk through potential solutions by offering a first semester online to new internationals, even if you were planning to meet in person, as a way to keep them engaged and keep them involved and really create something for them that is of value, that they will see as, this institution really understands me, they want to work with me, they want to get me there as soon as possible, but in the safest way possible. And that is the plan, that is the forward-thinking institution, that is the strategic institution that really sees that value of student first. And that seems to have gone by the wayside and for so many institutions as they made decisions that were more money first, financial first. When you think about butts in seats for fall classes, they won't be in seats potentially, particularly in large lecture halls. They're not going to be in your stadiums, more than 25% capacity, if that. For athletic events, what is the plan? And if that's only driven by financial, then there's a disconnect happening with your intended audiences. And I've referred to several of their articles as it relates to international recruitment, and folks at Inted do a really good job in thinking circumspectly and long-term on a lot of things. And they talk about, in a recent article called Investing in Growth, Looking Beyond the Fall, they talk about what that looks like and how the kind of the characteristics and skills you want to have built into your office, built into your institution, and identifying these in your leadership teams at, on your campuses is important. Resilience is built, is a main theme of this article, our skill that's needed. That's what they want to develop in their students, but that's also something they need to have and possess themselves and demonstrate on a regular basis in the face of challenges. And certainly this COVID-19 pandemic is right up there with the top, other than institutional impacted by, you think of Virginia Tech or think of Northern Illinois that had campus shootings where significant numbers died. Those things are obviously specific to institutions, but when you have something that's so wide-ranging and so such an impactful event like this global pandemic that's impacting all parts of our lives, that how resilient is your institution to that? And sticking with their plans and adapting plans and having flexible plans and reviewing plans on a regular basis. So what else are we talking about is that understanding the realities of the storm that we're in, or the challenges that we're facing currently, investing in the future is really what is will lead to growth and having that future focus, and also, frankly, risk mitigation. And that's something that, when you think about that and has that as a guiding principle, you're oftentimes better able to adapt to these kind of challenging situations. And understanding what those smart investments are in terms of how you market to your various audiences, how you must innovate and adapt in this market when we're talking about international students. And it's really just an overall approach to what you do in international admissions that is so important, that it has to have future thinking focus, student first focus, but also has a campus-wide approach in terms of the team that you have that's supporting what you're trying to do and how well your senior leaders understand what you do. And oftentimes that's half the battle when you can have those conversations, those hard conversations with those who are really the true decision makers. So that strategic piece is going to be important as we move forward and long-term thinking. It has to be factored into everything we do when it comes to international, particularly in these challenging times. Now, the final question of the day relates to test optional. We've covered this regularly on the Roundup. We've had a regular section of our newsletter each week focused on the latest stories that are popping up related to institutions that are going test optional. We oftentimes refer to a spreadsheet that's being developed where that actually catalogs of those schools that are going test optional, how many are also test optional for international students. And that's not always clear. But Sarah Loring de Garcia has regularly produced and updates a spreadsheet that she posts to international ACAC members on our Facebook group. But as she's just posted something yesterday on Facebook, I'll post the link again to the spreadsheet. But that now there are over 500 colleges that are specifically test optional for international students. That number has doubled since September 2019. So that's encouraging. In the past year, there's been huge growth, obviously, in universities and colleges around the U.S. that have become test optional, particularly since January and the impact of COVID-19. I'll be posting the links to the stories in the comments section where we've seen now, finally, all the Ivies. Princeton is the last to go. They just went over the weekend. That now all of the Ivy League institutions will be test optional for next year. Most all of them will say they're test optional only for the next class, for the incoming 2021 class. And I think that everybody's jumping on that bandwagon. And a lot of folks are late to the party. And I think that it's become less of a wow moment when these institutions are now making these decisions. We've seen other highly selective schools like Vanderbilt and Notre Dame that we'll cover in next week's newsletter who have also just gone test optional for the next intake in 2021. But it's no longer a big deal. It's almost like and frankly, if you're not already going test optional for the next academic or next admissions intake in 2021, you're kind of seen as behind the times and a little bit out of touch if you haven't made that decision. And there are a few schools that are still big name schools that are still out there. University of Illinois also just went test optional over the weekend. So we're seeing a lot of that happening, and it's becoming less and less of a surprise. But the larger question is, and it was raised here on the Roundup last week and again by the Washington Post this past week, is in an article entitled, "Colleges Are Ditching Required Admissions Tests Over COVID-19. Will They Ever Go Back?" And this is really the fundamental crux of the test optional movement. Is the value of tests, have they been completely disproved? And when you add in the extra elements of race relations in the United States and the world, where particularly in the U.S., those tests, one of the main reasons schools have gone test optional is because though the organizers of the tests, SAT, ACT, will say that they are not disadvantaged. Students are not disadvantaged if they come from minority backgrounds. The realities are schools are making decisions based on their own evidence and studies that they've seen to move away from tests as an important tool in the admissions process. Becoming test optional is the first step. Becoming test blind is the ultimate way to say to incoming international students or domestic students that we'll judge your ability to succeed here based on your high school performance, based on your academic performance, not how well you did on a test that for many students, particularly international students, is a test that's never designed for them. It's designed for U.S. students learning American English in a U.S. high school in the United States. So that's not the case for how students learn English and learn the various skills that they have that don't necessarily translate the same. So this Washington Post article certainly asked that question, and there's going to be a lot of soul searching in the next year, a lot of analysis of data from next fall's class. Obviously, that's a long way off, fall 2021, to see how they do. And I think there's a lot of institutions that have gone with a 2 or 3 year pilot project that are trying to be as thoughtful and practical as possible. They're probably taking the most conservative approach to making that final decision whether to ultimately drop tests, SAT or ACT, as a requirement for admissions. That's something that's going to be certainly something we're going to watch here on the Roundup, and we'll certainly keep you in the loop on all the news stories that pop on this topic and more as we go through our days. So test optional is certainly not a done deal, but certainly it's almost a given now that you better be test optional for 2021 intakes. But the reality is, will that policy stick? And that's the ultimate question that is still yet to be answered. But we're hoping that enough has happened in the world and the value of individual students and their academic performance is going to be based on how they do in their high school, much more so than it ever was. And most admissions officers will say test scores are one piece of the puzzle, and that's not the only thing that's going to deny a student. But the reality is, you can be academically qualified, but at some institutions, if your test scores aren't in a certain mid-range or minimum range that they require, even if you're a top student, you could be denied. And certainly the more selective an institution is, those test scores are absolutely going to be deal breakers for admissions. So when the reality becomes clear as to what's going to happen longer term, we'll certainly see if that test optional movement sticks. I hope it does. Because frankly, there's much less value in test scores now than there needs to be. There's less value that we put on that frankly I see in tests than should be part of the admissions equation, particularly for international students. And I'll say that to the day I die. So for now, that's all we got from the Roundup. We look forward to hearing your comments. And in the feedback, certainly please let us know how we're doing. And we're looking forward to catching up with you in the weeks to come. Have a great day.